The Small Hand, written by Susan Hill and read by Cameron Stewart.
Chapter 1. It was a little before 9 o'clock. The sun was setting into a bank of smoky violet cloud, and I had lost my way. I reversed the car in a gateway and drove back half a mile to the fingerpost. I had spent the past 24 hours with a client near the coast and was returning to London, but it had clearly been foolish to leave the main route and head across country. The road had cut through the downs, pale mounds on either side, and then run into a straight, tree-lined stretch to the crossroads. The fingerpost markings were faded, and there were no recent signs. So that when the right turning came, I almost shot past it, for there was no sign at all here, just a lane and high banks in which the roots of trees were set deep as ancient teeth. But I thought that this would eventually lead me back to the A road. The lane narrowed. The sun was behind me, flaring into the rear view mirror. Then came a sharp bend, the lane turned into a single track, and the view ahead was dark beneath overhanging branches. I slowed. This could not possibly be a way. Was there a house? Could I find someone to put me on the right road? I got out. Opposite me was an old sign, almost greened over. The White House. Below, someone had tacked up a piece of board. It hung loose, but I could just make out the words, "Garden Closed," in roughly painted lettering. Well, a house was a house. There would be people. I drove slowly on down the track. The banks were even steeper, the tree trunks vast and elephantine. Then, at the end of the lane, I came out of the trees and into a wide clearing, and saw that it was still light after all, the sky a pale, enamelled silver blue. There was no through road. Ahead were a wooden gate and a high hedge wound about with briars and brambles. All I could hear were birds settling down, a thrush singing high up on the branches of a walnut tree, and blackbirds pinking as they scurried in the undergrowth. I got out of the car, and as I stood there, the birdsong gradually subsided, and then there was an extraordinary hush, a strange quietness into which I felt I had broken as some unwelcome intruder. I ought to have turned back then. I ought to have retraced my way to the fingerpost and tried again to find the main road. But I did not. I was drawn on through the gate between the overgrown bushes. I walked cautiously, and for some reason tried not to make a noise as I pushed aside low branches and strands of bramble. The gate was stuck halfway, dropped on its hinges, so that I could not push it open further and had to ease myself through the gap. More undergrowth, rhododendron bushes, briar hedge growing through beech. The path was mossed over and grassy, but I felt stones here and there beneath my feet. After 100 yards or so, I came to a dilapidated hut which looked like the remains of an old ticket booth. The shutter was down. The roof had rotted. A rabbit, its scut bright white in the dimness of the bushes, scrabbled out of sight. I went on. The path broadened out and swung to the right. And there was the house. It was a solid Edwardian house, long and with a wide veranda. A flight of shallow steps led up to the front door. I was standing on what must once have been a large and well-kept forecourt. There were still some patches of gravel between the weeds and grass. To the right of the house was an archway, half obscured by rose briars, in which was set a wrought-iron gate. I glanced round. The car ticked slightly as the engine cooled. I should have gone back then. I needed to be in London, and I had already lost my way. Clearly the house was deserted and possibly derelict. I would not find anyone here to give me directions.